The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So I guess we'll begin. How is the volume? It sounds kind of low. Maybe if I talk a little bit more. Does that sound better to get a little bit louder? There we go. That sounds a little bit better. Does this sound okay for you guys? So for those of you who don't know, I'm Diana Clark, and one of the individuals who helps teach this happy hour. For the preceding weeks, we've had a number of substitute teachers. And I'll talk with Nikki Murgafori and see how we'll do the subsequent weeks. I'm around, and we'll see if Nikki's going to come back soon or what's going to happen exactly. So I may be here next week or I may not. So we have this expression, woke up on the wrong side of the bed. It's this idea that, you know, sometimes you just wake up and you're just kind of grouchy. You may not even know why. You just have this feeling that you're a little irritable and things are annoying and maybe the best version of yourself isn't showing up. You're maybe not so generous or maybe not feeling spacious. But implicit in this idea of woke up on the wrong side of the bed is that there's a right side of the bed, right? That there's another way to be. It's kind of implicit in this is that it's a temporary perspective, a temporary view that you're experiencing or somebody in your life is experiencing that then isn't permanent, but it's just a certain way that you're viewing the world. And maybe if you know that somebody has woke up on the wrong side of bed or that you have woken up on the wrong side of the bed, maybe you're less apt to take their grouchiness, their comments so personally. Maybe you're more apt to hold it lightly, like, oh, it's just their perspective right now. It doesn't mean that they're a permanently grouchy person or something like this. Similarly, when we do loving kindness practices, there may be a softening of the heart. There may be some quieting of the mind. A little bit more spaciousness, if you will, in the way that we are experience the world and the way that we're perceiving it. And we may be more generous, a little bit more kind in our interpretation of our events and what we're experiencing. So both of these experiences that perhaps many of us have, maybe I'll back up and say, it's not only loving kindness practice that can, which we were going to practice in a moment here, that can help kind of soften our hearts or help us kind of relax and ease into a sense of goodwill. Not only that, but even mindfulness practice can do that, right? In fact, many people find mindfulness practice or start doing it because it does reduce stress. In some ways, we can measure whether something is a practice has reduced stress. Do we just have a greater sense of well-being? Do we just have an increased sense of capacity to hold all the irritable things or the irritating things that happen to us in our day? So with recognizing that sometimes we feel grouchy, either for whatever reason, maybe sometimes we're running late, and I know when I run late, I'm surprised at what comes out of my mouth towards other cars. Like, get out of the way, you know. But I don't, you know, I'm not like that when I have plenty of time, but when I'm feeling pressed and I don't want to disappoint the person I'm supposed to be meeting or, you know, something like this, then there's this this closed, contracted feeling as opposed to an open, generous feeling. So all these examples point to this idea that how we perceive things is dependent on our mind state. This isn't profound. You've probably figured this out, noticed this. I'm going to just say this again, though, but how we perceive things is dependent on our mind state. This implies a few things. One is, if our mind state changes, then our perception of things will shift as well. It also implies that maybe there isn't an objective, completely 100% objective truth about how things are, because it's actually not possible to know how things are without perceiving them. But our perception is influenced by our mind states. So maybe we can soften this idea of like, okay, well, I know the truth has to be out there somewhere, and if I can just somehow figure it out or find it or tap into it somehow. Instead, just recognize that, oh, how we perceive things, how we perceive everything, is dependent on our mind state. Are we relaxed and spacious? Do we have a certain amount of well-being? Do we have a certain amount of contentment? Do we have a certain amount of happiness? Or are we contracted and grouchy or feeling irritable? So our experiences of, you know, going through the world, of course, will be different. And you don't need me sitting up here to tell you this. You all know this. You all have this experience. But it also points to the idea that we can cultivate and develop those mind states which help us perceive our experience in a way that is beneficial, that supports us, that supports not only our own well-being, but how we are in the world, our relationships with other people. So we can learn to develop particular mind states, to have access to particular mind states to help us perceive things in a more open, generous way. And that is a big part of what loving kindness practice is about. It's not only what loving kindness practice is about, but loving kindness practice can help to create a mind state that is less contracted, maybe a little bit, maybe just a little bit more loose, if that makes sense to you. Sometimes when we are in a lot of discomfort or in a lot of pain of all kinds, you know, emotional pain or physical pain, there can be a certain, it can be experienced as a contraction, is this word I keep on using, but it also can be experienced as if that's like our entire experience. If you have, for example, you're sitting in a particular posture, I'll just make this up, and you have a knee pain that's really, really persistent and really loud, I'll say, then kind of like your experience may shrink into all of this knee pain and the stories around it. What does this mean? I shouldn't have done X when I was younger, or that thing shouldn't have happened, and now I need to go to the doctors, but I don't know which doctor to go to, and I don't have good medical insurance, and I should have got better medical insurance, and whoosh, off we go, right, into this whole story, right? But it all kind of gets us, the concern, like, takes up all of our awareness, all of our experience. So when I'm talking about spaciousness, I'm talking about we may acknowledge, yes, there is discomfort in the knee. Yes, this is absolutely happening. But it's not the totality of our experience. We can acknowledge that there's also pressure on our bodies from where we're sitting. Our feet are also on the ground. There are sounds happening, my voice or other sounds in the room. There can be other things there that allow us to not get into a small kind of contracted way, which then can easily lend to a mind state which is not open, not generous, maybe I'll just stay with that. Open, spacious, and generous. What I mean by generous is also like, you know, giving the benefit of the doubt. Maybe the way that I'm perceiving it right now isn't the absolute truth. It's just the way I'm perceiving it right now, which is true and valid and real, the way you're perceiving it. But it doesn't mean it's the only way to perceive it. It doesn't mean it's the absolute truth. It's really happening, but it doesn't mean it's the only way. So loving kindness practice is a way that helps us create mind states that can help us perceive things in a little bit more open, spacious way. And maybe I'll say, there's a story from the Buddhist tradition that on the evening of the Buddha before he became awakened, so he wasn't quite a Buddha yet, but he had this aspiration to become awakened. For those of you who know the story, he sat at the base of a tree, made an aspiration to become awakened. And then Mara, who's the personification of obstacles to awakening. Let's just use that. You can say Mara is the one, is the personification of those forces that help us not find ease, not find awakening. So there's a story that Mara shows up, the personification of this person, and brings armies of demons that are going to shoot arrows towards the Buddha. And some of these descriptions are quite colorful. I kind of loved this. I'll read a little bit of this. Mara's army was a fearful sight, bristled with pikes, with arrows and swords, and many carried enormous battle axes and heavy clubs. The soldiers' eyes were cruel flames. Their mouths spewed blood. Some had the ears of a goat, other the ears of a pig or of an elephant, right? So you can see this phantasmagorical thing. Many had bodies shaped like a jug. One had the paws of a tiger and the head of a donkey. Another had a lion's mane and a rhinoceros horn. Many with 2, 4, or 5 heads, and others with 10, 12, and 20 arms. So you can see how this idea of Mara's difficulties can get really big, right? And really seems like they're insurmountable, right? And colorful, and all these different aspects to it. So the Mara then commanded his army to shoot arrows at the Buddha. But the arrows headed towards the person who was about to become the Buddha, towards him, and then they get transformed to flowers and fall to the ground. Pointing to this idea that difficulties, or in all its different forms, can be transformed into flowers, into something that isn't so difficult. They don't go away, just that our perception of them can be shifted. So this is, you know, kind of a crazy story, but it points to the idea, though, that things can be transformed. And the person who was becoming a Buddha was a, you know, incredible individual, and with the power of his mind could do this, transform arrows into flowers. So with that as an introduction, we'll do some loving kindness practice to help kind of create this mind state that can help us turn arrows into flowers. Maybe it won't be that dramatic. Maybe it'll just be a softening, a loosening up, maybe a little bit less constricted. But we start where we start. It's all valuable. It's all useful. We don't have to wait for some ginormous, you know, fantastic experience to validate it. It's just a small amount of softening, opening up. So we'll do loving kindness practice. We'll start with a benefactor who is somebody for whom it's easy to feel loving kindness towards. We use this word benefactor, often thinking that it's easiest to have loving kindness towards somebody that has benefited you, supported you, taken care or loved you, perhaps. The emphasis here is on someone for whom it's easy. So that may be somebody for whom you don't know so well. It could be a religious leader. It could be a leader of any type. But somebody you feel like that has supported you and that you can have respect and care for. If a person doesn't come to mind, some people like to use like puppies and kittens or babies. Like the whole point here is to just be able to generate some loving kindness, some warmth here. It's less important exactly for whom this person is or being is. And then after doing loving kindness for a benefactor for a little bit, we'll open it up and do loving kindness for ourselves. This turns out to be remarkably important and sometimes not so easy. We need a little bit of practice with this. And we'll do loving kindness practice that has three elements. One is bringing to mind the individual. So that's either like visually or maybe whatever way is easiest for you to have a felt sense of the person. Imagining them or maybe just what does it feel like to be in their presence. The second element is phrases, which you can repeat silently in your mind. I'll be leading us in this. And the phrases are just to help support this feeling of loving kindness, goodwill, warmth, and care. You're welcome to modify their phrases. There's nothing magic about these in particular. They're just to help support us. And the third is a kind of keeping in touch with any feelings that we are experiencing, whether they're feelings of warmth and care, maybe a literal feeling of softening of the heart, if that makes any sense to you. But because we're doing these practices, we're creating the conditions for loving kindness to arise. That doesn't mean we are making loving kindness. There's no guarantees that you will feel loving kindness. It's not unusual sometimes when we start these practices that what comes to mind is the opposite of loving kindness. Like we have this intention to have goodwill, and what comes to mind is like all those times when we didn't have goodwill. That's okay. That's part of the practice. And see if you can be with that. And see if you can, as best you can, have some loving kindness towards those sensations or those thoughts. Okay, so let's start with an alert, upright posture. And we'll take three long, slow, deep breaths just to connect with our bodies. And let's allow the breathing to return to normal and just trust that the body knows how to breathe. We don't need to manipulate it or change it in any way. And we can check in with our body and see if there are some obvious places of tension or tightness that can be softened or let go of without making this a big project. We can check in with often we hold tension with our eyes, behind the eyes, or the jaw. Maybe the neck. And the shoulders, allowing them to drop and the shoulder blades to slide down the back. Check in with our arms and our hands, allowing them to relax and to readily let go of any tension we find. If there's still tension there, that's okay. We don't have to try to remove all our attention. You can check in with the chest and the belly. And the back. And you can feel the pressure of the chair or the cushion against your body. Check in with your legs and feet. And then to begin, we'll do a small amount of mindfulness of breathing. So bringing our attention to the sensations of breathing. So that is the movement of the abdomen, the movement of the chest, or feeling the air going in and out of your nose. You can choose one of those three, whichever feels the easiest or the most comfortable. And just rest your attention there. When the mind wanders, and it naturally will, that's what minds do, just very gently bring it back to the sensations of breathing. Now this resting of awareness or bringing attention to the sensations of breathing can be a home base for you, can be a place if you ever feel overwhelmed or a little bit confused or you forget what you're doing, you can always come back to this practice, just feeling the sensations of breathing. This can be an anchor, a home base. And then to begin the loving kindness practice, bring to mind a benefactor or another lovable being. As I said, someone for whom it's easy to feel love, warmth, care, respect, kindness. You can use whichever word or whatever felt sense resonates with you. Bring this person or being to mind. Then you can repeat silently after me the phrases. And the phrases are just to support a sense of care and warmth towards this individual. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Again, you're welcome to modify these phrases if you'd like. And of course, they don't have to be in English. Perhaps another language is the language of your heart. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Again, you can check in and see if you're still connected with your benefactor. If not, you can bring that being to mind. And maybe also check in with your heart center or wherever you may feel warmth or kindness, goodwill. And if you do feel some warmth or kindness, allow that to get as big as it would like. It doesn't have to get any larger. It doesn't even necessarily have to be there. But if you do experience that, there's no reason to keep it small. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Now I'll be silent for a little bit, and you can extend loving kindness to your benefactor in any way that feels natural and easy for you. Now we'll build on this loving kindness that we've developed or cultivated for the benefactor or another lovable being, and expand it to include ourselves. Because of course we deserve loving kindness. Of course we do. So in the same way that we were sending warmth, goodwill, care, respect, love, whatever word you'd like to use, towards the benefactor, can we do the same for ourselves? So you can bring a felt sense of yourself to mind. You can do that either by like feeling yourself here and now sitting here, or maybe visualizing yourself either as how you are now, or even if you find it easier, you could visualize yourself as a young person, even a toddler or a baby. Whatever way feels easy and accessible. then we'll just modify the phrases. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Now I'm going to be silent for a bit, so you can practice loving kindness in a way that feels supportive for you, either towards a benefactor or yourself. Or perhaps you can switch to mindfulness of breathing if that feels more supportive. And then to end this meditation, feel the pressure of the chair or the cushion against your body. Feel your feet on the ground. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So now, having spent 30 minutes meditating, you can check in on a number of things. Maybe how is your relationship or your view or the way that you are perceiving your benefactor? Is it the same as how it was before, or has it shifted a little bit? Like during this practice, do you feel a little bit different? When loving kindness practice is strong, there's can be, you know, you feel a connection to this person that perhaps you didn't feel before, or maybe not so as tightly, or maybe their goodness, quote unquote, really is really shines through in a way that you hadn't seen before. Or maybe for ourselves, maybe we have a little bit, after doing this practice, a little bit more forgiveness for ourselves, a little bit more positive self-regard, something like this. And thirdly, maybe just generically, there's just a little greater sense of well-being. It doesn't have to be our dominant experience, but maybe there's just a little bit of sense of ease or contentment or a little bit of happiness. This is a powerful resource for humans, right? That we have this capacity that we can cultivate and develop qualities that help bring greater contentment, sense of well-being and ease. And then from that place of well-being and ease, even if it's not our dominant experience, but just to recognize that it exists, we will make different types of decisions. We will do different types of actions. And we will feel differently, right, if we can tap into this sense of well-being. And the more practice that we do, the easier it becomes to access that sense of well-being, even in the midst of difficulties, when we're feeling like Mara's army is there shooting us with all kinds of different arrows. We find it's easier and easier to turn them into flowers, something that isn't so harmful. Maybe even has some beauty or grace to it. So it's quite something to be able to have a practice that enables us to kind of quiet the mind and soften the heart, which then influences how we perceive the world, which of course then influences how we behave in the world. So now I'd like to open it up for any comments or questions. About the practice we've done, either about what we said or as the practice, some things that came up or that you experienced that you'd like to share, or I always take it as a good sign when there isn't questions right away. Means that there's a certain amount of settledness. Does anybody want to comment on this idea that the way that we perceive things is influenced by our mind state? And we can cultivate different mind states. It's probably something that is not new to us. We've probably noticed it, but maybe to say it so explicitly and to think about, oh, well, what mind states am I cultivating? If not mind states that support well-being, warmth, and care.
Well, because I've been coming here now for a while, and I think that my mind states have definitely changed. And sometimes when people really come at me, it doesn't land quite so harshly and so in such a threatening way. I, you know, like you said, I kind of now am like more like, what's going on with this person? Not like, what's wrong with me that they're coming at me? And so it just allows it to land a little bit different. And then I can ask, you know, maybe ask a question or maybe say, wow, you seem really frustrated right now, instead of, you know, launching back, which is easy to do.
Wow. I don't think we should underestimate the power of this, right? How many times have we said things in response to something that's coming towards us that later we regret, right? That escalates into something that's not helpful. But just to gain that capacity when somebody's coming at you, however that shows up, just to gain the capacity to hold that, like, okay, this is what's happening right now. Instead of getting right in there and shooting our own arrows at them or shooting arrows at ourselves. I really deserve it. I can't believe I did X, Y, Z or something. I think this is how our lives change, actually, is just by this subtle little shift. This is how practice works, right? If we're looking for big, dramatic, big bang things, we may be disappointed. But it's sustainable to have just a little shift. Like, oh yeah, less often I'm less responsive or reactive, maybe is the right word, to some difficulties that show up. And then our capacity continues to grow and to grow the more we practice. Anybody else have something to say? Or? Can you use the microphone, please?
I thought it was really great how you guided us through the meditation, because it's really easy to lose the focus, and it just settled in really nicely, the repetition that we can keep following it, and the good statements that you're making just felt so good.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah, sometimes it can be annoying to have somebody doing guided meditation, right, because their pace may not match your pace or something like this. But so I'm happy to hear that it was helpful.
Really gentle. It was very nice.
Thank you. And we have a comment over here.
Something that you said right before we started, a couple of minutes before we started, was about, I don't remember the exact words, but it was about shifting the way you look at something, not shifting the truth. Something about this may or may not be the truth, but it's the way you're looking at it at this moment. There may be another way to look at it, which kind of stayed with me through the whole meditation. And I sort of came out the other end with, it's all how you hold it. That there's so many things that feel completely not in our control, and you can't change them necessarily or do anything about it, but you can hold it a different way.
Yes.
That's what kind of came to me.
Exactly. Right? This is a key to a happy life, actually. Right? We don't get to control our environment. We keep on trying. Like, we always are trying, right? And if you were successful completely controlling your environment, you would not be in this room. You would be out there, you know, in bliss, right? What we can have some influence over is our relationship to what's happening. Not what's happening. We don't get to choose that necessarily. But our relationship. Are we going to be filled with hatred and vengeance or anxiety? Or are we going to be able to say, like, okay, this is what's happening, and I'm experiencing it this way. There may be other ways to experiencing it, but this is without like grabbing on, and this is the truth and it's terrible and that's a bad person or I'm a bad person or this other thing, but to hold things with a little bit more open-handedly.
I also have a question. I've been reading the book, I think it's called The Five Questions. I think that's what it's called. It's the Frank Ostasevsky book.
Yes.
And in the second question has to do with saying yes to everything and not pushing away experiences or thoughts that are negative or unpleasant. And I'm kind of struggling with that one. Because this other thing about it's all how you hold it and what frame of mind you put yourself in to deal with the realities you don't like, kind of, I can't have a hard time balancing that with say yes to everything, even the bad experiences of life.
Yeah, so I'm not familiar with this book. I know the idea of it, but this is my interpretation of it. So his idea of saying yes to everything is to recognize that there's no such thing as an illegitimate thought or an illegitimate experience. It happened. You had that thought. You had that experience. It did happen. But so often we're trying to like push away kind of the reality of the experience or pretend like it didn't happen. So when he's saying, say yes to the experience, is to acknowledge, yes, I had this feeling of intense hatred towards somebody else, but then let that experience just pass away. Without getting tangled up in it, I'm a bad person because I had this, or trying to shove it away, because we have this experience. If we try to pretend experiences aren't there, they show up in other ways. So our experiences are legitimate. They're there for a reason. We may not know what the reason is, and it may not even be important what the reason is. But just to say, like, okay, this is the truth of this moment. The truth of my reality right now is that I'm filled with rage. I'm just using this. But just allow the rage to be there without making it a problem. So just allow the rage to be there, and then it will just run out of energy and go away. That's the nature of things, to arise and pass away. Mm-hmm. They arise and they stay and persist when we get all tangled up with them. Oh, this rage, I'm a rageful person, I shouldn't have rage, and this reminds me of that time, other time I had rage, and that other person really deserved it, and I think this person deserves it too. Then we just get spinning around in it, right? That's different than just, whoop, here's some rage, and then just let it go. So that's kind of like saying yes, is just like acknowledging the truth of your experience at that moment without trying to pretend it's not there, or wish it's not there, or that's my interpretation. I can put the mic here. Thank you.
That last comment reminded me of something that has worked for me a little bit when working with negative thoughts, and that is practicing with itches. When I have an itch, I want to scratch it, which I guess from the itch's point of view is not a particularly kind thing to do, you know, go away. Sounds so kind of funny right now when I'm saying this, but frankly, just to welcome the itch, you know, like, oh, this is an experience I'm having, and what is this? Why is this happening, and what does it want to say to me? Welcome, itch. And I just find if I can hold my attention on the itch, then it just is, as you were saying, Diana, just kind of rises and it passes away. So for me, that's been helpful, because then when I struggle with the negative thoughts too, but I find that with practicing with itches, it's been easier than with the negative thoughts, but it's helpful then to kind of go to the negative thoughts, and I can deal with it a little bit similarly. So just reminded me of that a little bit.
Thank you so much for saying that, because there's a reason why we're starting loving kindness practice with a benefactor, because we're starting where it's easy. We don't have to start with the most difficult things. It may be difficult to work with some of our difficult emotions, right? We're invested in them. They're complicated. We have a lifelong history, perhaps, or something of this supporting it. So we can start where it's easy, itches, or whatever it may be. And then we just build a capacity, build a capability.
I was just going to say, I notice a really big difference from before and after this meditation session, and So today it was kind of like a grumbly day, and I can drive and think, okay, you know, remember loving kindness. But there's something about sitting with it for 40 minutes that really changes things, and it's the same day, but it's a very different outlook.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you. And then I think Jessica in the back, and that'll be our last one.
I have a question. I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about the difference between loving kindness practice and affirmation practice. Yeah. I practice both, and I find them both helpful, but I'm not sure like what to pull on in different moments, and maybe you can clarify and help me out a little bit.
Yeah, so I will say that I actually don't have experience with affirmation practice. So I'm not sure that I can speak to this from an experiential point. But here, with loving kindness, we're using the phrases to just help engender a particular feeling, to help support the arising of particular experiences. And so I don't know if affirmation practice is the same, that you're just saying these words to help support a particular mind state or something like that. So if they are, then it's this similar. But I'm afraid I can't really address this otherwise. Okay. Thank you, Jessica. So it's 7:00. I want to thank all of you and wish you all some pleasant mind states that help you on your drive home. And I'll stop here if some of you have some questions or comments you'd like to say. So thank you.